Good evening. My name is Michael, and I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I don't have enough time to go through all of it. So we'll just let it suffice that I suffer from a number of challenges and addictions, and I didn't have a solution before I got here. I want to thank Jeff for the invitation tonight. I didn't know what I was going to start my resentment list with tonight, so this will go right at the top for my 10th step. What a beautiful start to the meeting. I've never been to a meeting like this, and I feel incredibly insignificant, and that's good for a guy like me. I'm an imperfect person. You may have guessed that already, and you're way ahead of me because it took me a really long time to figure that out about me. And I figured out that you were imperfect, and it didn't take me long to figure that out. But it was a source of constant irritation and anger and challenges in my life. I didn't know how to deal with my not being perfect, and I certainly had a lot of trouble dealing with your not being perfect. I'll do the math really quickly, and I'll tell a very brief story. I was really inspired by the music and a visual tonight. And instead of taking you through what might be my story, I think I'll take you through another story. I know Gino likes stories, so I'll go ahead and tell one. Very quickly, I guess the first indication that I might have a problem was when I came home from the first day of school. I don't remember this, but my mom told me the story. And I came home crying. And she asked if, did somebody hurt you at school? Did one of the kids hurt you? I said, no, my teacher did. She said, I have to come back tomorrow. I haven't learned everything yet. And that really frustrated me. And she said, it's okay, honey. You know, you're not supposed to learn everything right away. And I put my hand on my hip as she describes it, and I looked at her and I said, you know, but how do you know I don't know everything? I was about 4.5 years old, and it was about another 7 years before I took my first drink. But the alcoholic thinking was well in advance of that first drink for me. That first drink at age 11 was cleaning up at a folks' cocktail party, and a friend and I were nice enough to help clean up all those empty glasses, and semi-empty glasses, and stack them on the sink, and sampled one or two, and wow, I liked that. For the first time, there was just something about it that felt good, and I took a couple more of the glasses and emptied those, and I felt even better. And my friend had kept up at that point, and he sat down and he just said, God, I think I'm going to be sick. And my first thought was, awesome, all the rest of that's for me. And that's all I saw, and that's all I thought. I drank like that. I used like that. I tried to be a gentleman. If I stole your dope, I'd offer to help you look for it. You know, my teens, I did the social drinking, and I was a pretty happy guy. I would drink and have a great deal of fun. In my 20s, I partied real hard, and I had a lot of fun, and I just considered myself a happy drinker. And somewhere a little bit later on, I had a few problems, and I found it was just easier for me to drink over those problems. Someone might describe me as a problem drinker, but I was a happy drinker, and I was a problem drinker. Unfortunately, over a little bit more time, my problems got a little more serious, and most of them were tied to my drinking. And some friends came to me and suggested that I really might have a problem, and I should, you know, maybe consider not drinking. So I went on a cocaine alternative program for about, I don't know, it was a couple years and several tens of thousands of dollars, and it seemed to work really well. I hardly drank at all at that time. A little bit later, I ran out of money, And someone told me I really had a serious drug problem and I ought to do something about it. So I turned to the next solution, which is I started drinking again. And I found that if I drank just right, I could manage my drug problem. And, that was probably in about my 40s, I guess. And, then the alcohol stopped working. And so I thought I'd just kind of combine the two and find a happy medium. And that seemed to work, at least in my mind, because I felt less. I wasn't quite as upset by how imperfect you were. And I wasn't quite as frustrated by how imperfect I felt. There's a lot of wreckage in my life, and I won't go into all of that. There's a couple wives that are strewn on the side, and a couple of children and some stepchildren, several grandchildren, some that I finally have been privileged enough to get back in their lives. I'm not happy with that. It's just part of the road that I've walked. Instead of telling you, you know, that's a little bit of how I got here. You know, how I got here is barely. And what it's like since is a whole lot better than what it was. I was inspired watching, listening, and actually singing. And I don't sing, but I was moved to sing tonight from the inside out. And I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you. I saw the boat. And the boat on the water, and it just reminded me of really what's my story. You know, I was on the party boat. I was on that party boat for a long time. For a while, I was just a guest, and then I kind of worked there. And sometimes for a period of time, I thought I was a social director on the boat, and I made sure everybody else had a good time. I was lucky enough to be the captain, or I'd appointed myself the captain of that party boat for a while. And I thought I looked good in, you know, the uniform. And, you know, that boat started taking on water. And there were some friends of mine that were on that boat, too, and they jumped off. And I guess I felt I was the captain of that ship, and it was my requirement to go down with the ship. And I stayed around, and I stayed on the party boat. I would try to stop, and all I would do was be uncomfortable, miserably uncomfortable. And then I would drink and I would use and I would be miserably uncomfortable. And it went like that day in, day out, and I didn't have any hope. You know, the ship finally went down and I went down with it, and I don't know why. But somehow I popped up on the surface, and I can tell you at the time that happened that I absolutely wish I'd gone down with that ship. I did not want to be where I was. It was a horrible, lonely place. Very, very cold, very, very dark, and all alone. And hopeless, and bobbing up and down, and struggling to try to stay afloat, and just feeling absolute despair. I don't know how long that was, because I don't have a sense of time, but I happened upon something that was floating on the water, and there were a group of people on it. As I got closer to it, I said, "Hey, you know, throw me a rope." And they didn't move. And I swam and swam, and I didn't feel like I was getting any closer to it. And it's like, "Hey, throw me a life preserver." Nobody moved. I said, "I'm dying here. Somebody throw me a drink." And nobody moved. Water, that'd be fine, anything. Nobody moved. And finally I said, "Would someone please help me?" And they did. They all moved, and they pulled me on board. You know, I was cold, and I was wet, and I was miserable. And they scooted around and moved me to the middle and made sure that I stayed warm. Helped me dry up a little bit and just took care. But I didn't feel like it was going anywhere. And a day came along that there was a smaller boat that came by. And I saw a light off, and the light got closer. And it came near, and I'd learned my lesson to not wait. And I said, "Can I go with you?" And the guy said, "Hop in." And it was a little rowboat, nothing really fancy. And he was an old guy, and I'm going to say his name is Gus. Good old grumpy Gus. And I don't know if he was, a really old fart in 50 or really, really old in about 150. It's kind of hard to tell. He said, sit down, get the oars. And I sat amidship and facing backwards. And he leaned back, holding on to the tiller. And he said, start rowing. He said, I don't know that I really know how to row. He said, just move your arms and we'll figure this thing out together. So I did, and I kept rowing a little bit. And I had a lot of questions for Gus, and Gus didn't answer my questions real well. He had his own style of answering. Like, Gus, where are we going? He'd say, hopefully in the right direction, Michael. And he'd be quiet again, and I'd keep rowing. And over a period of time, I asked that guy quite a few questions. And I would want to turn around and say, where are we headed in the right direction? He said, man, I really hope so. He said, son, when you turn around and look ahead trying to figure out where we're going, we don't keep going straight. And we sure don't seem to be going in the right direction. Why don't you just keep looking back and pulling on the oars, and I'll just do a little bit of the steering. And that went on for a while, and after a while it was kind of struck me like, hey, Gus, I'm doing all the damn rowing here. Why don't we change places? And he said, Michael, when it's your turn to steer, I'll let you know. Just keep rowing. So I did, and those storms weren't always real calm. There were a lot of big swells, and sometimes there were huge storms. But when it was dark, Gus had this little lantern. And, he'd hold it up and look ahead and make a little course correction and just tell me to keep rowing. I'm doing fine. Somehow things would pass, time would pass, and it got a little bit easier to row. I got a little bit stronger, and the seas got a little bit calmer for a period. But it always seemed like it was just a little bit dark. And I asked Gus some questions. Why do you have me keep looking backwards? And he said, so you can see where you've been and figure out if where you've been recently is a little bit straighter and a little bit more on a correct path than all that wobbling we were doing when you first got on board. I said, well, where were we? Where was I? What was that group of people? He said, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You were on the program. He said, and now you're in it. And I think I like being in this program. He said, well, you keep rowing, and I'll keep steering, and the seas are going to get a little bit calmer, and things are going to be okay. Gus asked me a few questions. He asked me a lot about my life. He asked me what was the worst thing I ever did, the biggest secret that I had, and something I'd never want to tell anybody. I said, Gus, I can't tell you that. He said, why not? I said, well, I'd really be ashamed. He said, some of the stuff I did, I'm so ashamed I wouldn't want God to know it. And he laughed with a twinkle in his eye, and he said, and you think God doesn't know what you did? He said, it's time to come clean, son, and just tell your story. Tell all those things and let them out, because it's going to be okay. And if you can clean that up and make some room, then you're going to make some room in yourself for a little of his grace, more of his grace to come in your life. Every time Gus and I would chat, we'd sometimes chat about God, and I had a lot of questions about God because he'd obviously abandoned me real early because look what had happened to me, poor me. And somewhere along the line, I was, being that I knew everything already and I didn't have anybody else to tell me anything more new, there was a church that didn't make a lot of sense to me, and I had some real suspicion about some of the people in there weren't perfect. So I didn't think that religion thing had worked for me, and somewhere I said, God, I'll make you a deal. I won't come into your house and you don't come knocking on my door. And that's how I lived my life for about 30 years while I was captain of that party boat. But every time, I ask Gus, what's this deal about God? And he just kind of smile and say, well, you'll know. He said, you already do know. He said, it's that thing you've got inside. So now I haven't felt anything inside for a really long time. But every time we talk about God, that little lantern of his got a little bit brighter and brighter. And there were some times that he might be napping and I was rowing. And I'd hear the noise and the laughter and the tinkle of glasses. And a big party boat would go by. And I'd think, you know, here I am in this little dinky rowboat rowing my ass off day after day. And wouldn't that be a nice place to be? Thought of those things, but the boat was moving in a different direction, and Gus had told me to just keep my eye on where I'd been and make sure that I didn't go back that way. So I chose not to get back on the party boat. It's a little time later that we nudged up, you know, felt our boat kind of stop, came to rest, and Gus said, stay right here. He got out of the boat, and it was too dark to really see much, but I heard him over here, and I tried to look around and couldn't see much, and I thought, maybe we've got to our destination, and I don't know if it's a deserted island. I don't know if there's a gazillion people here. Or I don't know if it's the gates of heaven. I have no idea where I am. It just feels like I've landed somewhere. And Gus came back, and he said, all right, Michael, it's time for you to push off, and now go get somebody else. Gus, what about your lantern? I'm going to need that. He said, you take the one that's right there. That's yours. It's been yours the whole time. And it's been your light that's showing the way, because that's come from inside. He said, I've got my own lantern, and that's over in my boat, and I'm going to get in my boat, and I'm going to go look for somebody too. So, Gus, I'm not sure where I'm supposed to go. And he said, just trust the light. It'll be okay. You know exactly where you need to go. That's my story. And, you know, I was a guy, it was so dark, it was so wet, it was so cold, and it was so desperate and alone. And I was absolutely full of despair. And I found a light. Light had always been there. I just failed to ask. And when I finally did ask, I began to trust God, and once I trusted God, I learned how to clean my side of the street. Once I could do that, I was able to help others. And I continue to do that today. And some days like today, I get to ride around, row around in my own boat and have room for somebody else to jump on board. And this time, as Gus told me, what do I do with a guy? He said, you make sure that you steer and you make sure that he does all the rowing. He said, but don't be surprised when you see the second lantern. He said, you won't need yours anymore. That will be his. And use his light to guide your trip. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has been to me. I'm an imperfect man in an absolutely imperfect world surrounded by imperfect people. And I'm perfectly happy today. What a gift. You know, I thank you for being able to share my story. I know that everybody in here suffers, and I know everyone has a solution, and I know each of you have a personal solution inside. And when I listen to you sing and I watch people rock, I know that that spirit is alive in each and every one of us. What a beautiful thing. You know, no human power could have relieved me from alcoholism, but God could. And he would, and he did, because he was sought, because I sought him. And I hope you seek the same. Yeah, we're all here on different paths. We all got here different ways. And I suspect that it's not just on our own prayers that got us in this room. It's the prayers of family and prayers of people that loved us. It's all of those prayers that helped get us here. But it's our own prayers that help keep us here. My name's Michael. I'm an alcoholic, and God bless you all. Thank you.